If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn and I'm your host. I am joined today by Peter DiPuzzo. Now, if you've ever worked on Wall Street in the late 1900s and early 2000s, you probably know the name Peter DiPuzzo. Peter was born and raised in Hoboken, New Jersey. He began his career as a runner at Loeb Rhodes, advancing to wire operator in the OTC trading room. He learned how to use teletype and Morse code to relay order executions to correspondent firms in every major city around the U.S. Peter attended Rutgers University at night, and in 5 years received his BA in business administration with a minor in economics. During this time, he married his high school sweetheart, Mary Jane, while advancing to junior market maker. He was recognized by John Loeb and many of the other senior analysts, such as Mario Gabelli, Mike Steinhardt, John Levin, as a trader who could make good judgment calls and had a good feel for the market. Then came Sandy Weill, who became Peter's mentor. Sandy gave Peter a wide berth to prove himself as head of equity. He retained that title when the company was known as Shearson Loeb Rhodes, then Shearson American Express, Shearson E.F. Hutton, and finally Shearson Lehman Brothers. By that point, Peter was running retail and institutional equity trading and sales. Peter was elected president of Security Traders Association of New York and then chairman of National Securities Traders Association. Peter was often quoted in the press and media as a spokesman for the NASD and overall market. His wife and three sons have stood by him through thick and thin, including his legal battle with the New York Stock Exchange in 1991, and most important, the horrendous personal losses after 9/11. In the words of Peter DiPuzzo, and I quote, "Nothing in my career was more satisfying than helping others find their talents. Not everyone could be a stock trader or institutional salesman or retail liaison. But working with people and helping them find their proper position was ever so satisfying, and I kept in touch with dozens of these fellow employees for the last 30 to 40 years. Please help me welcome a former coworker of mine and a dear friend, Peter DiPuzzo." How are you, Peter?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you, Ari. I appreciate the kind comments and the introduction. Late 90s was very flattery because actually I started making my marks in Wall Street in the late 60s. Oh. So I'm a little older than you are, and started work right out of high school in 1958, and in the mid-60s, you know, getting my apprenticeship, I guess is what it was, and had some good calls and got to know some wonderful people who are still lifelong friends.
Wow. It's been a long time, let me tell you. So what have you been doing to keep yourself busy these days, especially during COVID?
Well, we have sort of been close to home. You know, we're in the age bracket that we're to not to take any extra risks. I would say I'd rather go back a couple of years and say we've been working with the Greenwich Hospital on the board, and that was a very satisfying 5 years working with the Greenwich Hospital board. And of the last 2 years, they've asked me to stay on their finance committee, so I've done that. And of course, that was all done via Zoom, these kinds of meetings. I'm also past member of the board of the place called the Shelter for the Homeless up in Stamford, Connecticut. It's changed its name to the Pacific House, and it's a magnificent experience because it started with my sons and myself and Mary Jane going up and feeding the homeless. You know, they had 75, 80 people come in every night, and food in most cases is donated by some of these fast food restaurants and some of the local restaurants. And they get fellows come up and say, "Can I have another plate?" Or is it all right if I take two rolls? And you say, "My God, you know, here you're really donating your time and you're seeing the benefit from it." I mean, it's really very rarely in philanthropy that you see that one-on-one with the people that you want to help. And anyway, I found that eye-opening and, you know, stayed a contributor and became a member of the board. And they're doing wonderful job up there, by the way. They're buying houses and redoing them so that the people can get that next step, so that if they can get a job and they help them find a job, they can get temporary housing in these buildings, and they're charged about 25% of what the rent would normally be until they get on their feet and hopefully get on their own. Yeah, that was a satisfying thing. But I, of course, during the COVID thing, I couldn't do that any longer, so I gave it up to some younger people who I'm very proud to say are still doing that kind of work.
That's awesome. That's really great. At the end of the show, I'm going to ask you for, in case people want to sign up to work there or volunteer or whatever, I'll ask you how they should do that, but we'll do that at the end of the show. Now, as you know, the name of this podcast is Whispers and Bricks. The whispers are those voices that tell you what's the right thing to do, and it represents the good in life. The bricks represent the bad things that we go through in life. And let's be real, everybody has bricks thrown at them at some point in time. Now, it's common knowledge that in your lifetime, at some point, you're going to get hit with at least one brick, if not more. Now, I know that you've had some bricks thrown at you, certainly in 1991. I've had some bricks thrown at me. However, I always tell my audiences that I had the biggest brick thrown at me on 9/11. This is something that you and I share. We've both had that brick thrown at us. What I find amazing is, especially after listening to what you've been doing lately, is that we both started listening to the whispers, trying to help people and give hope to the world. Now, my audience knows my 9/11 story. Now what we want to hear is your 9/11 story. Where were you that day? What were you doing? How did you survive? And how did you cope with the loss after 9/11?
Okay, I never forget where I was and what I was doing. It was sort of a change in my life going on. In 2001, I was 60, and I was beginning to work just Tuesdays and Thursdays in New York, and 3 days a week up in the Darien office. And I lived up in Wilton, Connecticut, which was pretty far up, so that's why I did that. And this was a Tuesday morning, 9/11, I'll never forget that. I was walking down the stairs because I was going to be meeting a financial advisor about getting a new mortgage. And as I was coming down the stairs, I heard in the things on TV, my wife had it on, Mary, she was listening to the TV, and she says, look, and we just couldn't believe it. I mean, we both just sat down and were frozen. And basically, you know, knowing the building and having gone through what happened, I guess, back in 93, and that time I was in the building upstairs. You were probably too, weren't you, Ari, when the explosion in the basement?
I remember the explosion in the basement, but I started that year, 1993, but I started in October, and this happened earlier. This was, I think, in February. Right. So that was something that I missed, thank God.
Yeah, well, I tell you, 93, we were up there, and it was nothing. I mean, nothing compared to what happened in 9/11, walking down 105 flights and that stuff. But I called our office in Darien and said, are you hearing from them? They were hearing last cries for help and people sending messages to send to their family. And, you know, it was really devastating. It was just saying, what can I do? How can I help? How can I get people out? And obviously, not just your own firm, but all of human beings that were ultimately going to pass that day, even then, not knowing the building was going to collapse, the other building was going to collapse, and so many souls were going to be lost, just said a prayer. And we went to our local minister here in town after things were over, and there were lots of people from town gathered, Christian, Jew, Muslim, everybody was there, and they had it all in, you know, one area, which I thought was really very nice. So we could sit down and talk and go over what our losses were and how sad it was. And for the next 3 weeks or so, Mary Jane and I attended 25, probably should have done 100, but 25 ceremonies at the various shuls and churches and synagogues. And it was just something where my head didn't stop spinning. And Howard Lutnick stood up and, you know, we said we were going to do this and do that for various people. And you had to do that. You had to give them what they would owed, even though records were not there anymore. Things had been blown up. The various backups of what we thought we had really were non-existent. You know, you were just thinking, and yet the people who lost their partners and spouses, you know, cared very little about how much you were going to give them or what you were going to do for them. But we felt that was one of the only things we could do. And I tell you, we had a good sociable relationship with our people. Mary Jane and I knew of the 250 people that worked directly for me, about 100 were people we socialized with, meaning to say, you know, we had a Christmas party or we had various functions, and we knew them personally. We knew their children. We knew some of them had just gotten married. Others were going to retire. One of my saddest stories, my longest time friend, Eddie Mazzella, had just turned 65 the week before and was going to retire the week before. We had, in fact, taken him out and given him some drinking things with him, had a party. But the fellow who worked with him was getting married the weekend before 9/11 and was on his honeymoon. So Eddie stayed to cover the accounts.
Wow.
And so he stayed, and that poor young man, I don't know if he's ever gotten over it. You know, here he is getting married and starting his life, and Eddie wanted to end his life on a nice retirement. He and his wife and children, unfortunately, had, you know, a very sad ending. But tell you, the following years, it was wonderful to see many of the wives and husbands and children of these fallen heroes. They were fallen heroes. We'd have a golf outing or some sort of charitable event. And it was so wonderful to go to that and to say a word or two and about that person and to see that the family was still going forward and still, you know, the life didn't end. You might take something away from somebody, but they didn't cause them to end their life. And you just have to remember that Dalai Lama, I guess, said it. When you look at what's happened, You have to find the right path. You cannot control what happens in your life, but you can't control the way you, what you will do about it.
Yeah, your reaction.
Your reaction to it, yeah.
Right.
I think it was a fellow named Brian Tracy who came up with that, but in probably 100 different people get up, you know how hard you fall is how many times you get up.
Absolutely.
And with things like that. I was so impressed with seeing these people being so resilient and being so God-fearing and know that they had to raise their children and know how they had to go forward, and they did it, and it was just amazing. We're still in touch with a lot of, fortunately, and I couldn't, frankly, when you asked me, you know, how I handled it, I couldn't, frankly, think of starting over again completely. I retired in 2005. Bill Marber, who was my co-worker, you know, senior guy there with me, I said, you please do it for me. I can't do it. You know, he went and hired all new people. I couldn't do that. I wasn't in the frame of mind to think I'm going to replace people who I knew and loved, you know, with other people out there. And I just couldn't get back to a normal way of life. My business career basically was over. And in 2005, officially, I called it quits.
Wow. I'm one of the people, obviously, that can empathize with you. Besides your guys in equities, I knew the fixed income guys. I knew most of the firm, you know, because of what I was doing at the time, you know, involved with the entertainment tickets and the like. So I just knew everybody. And I had, for me, and I don't think I've ever said any, told anybody, the thing that I couldn't get over. I had a guy who was working for me, Keith Burns. I don't know if you remember him or not, but he was working for me, and an opportunity arose and he came to discuss it with me, to ask me what I thought. And he had an opportunity to go up to the equity trading floor. And I said to him, I didn't hesitate. I mean, I said, as much as I hated to lose him because he was a great, great employee. I said to him, Keith, what you're doing now is a dead end job. Okay. It was more for an entry level, which is what you were when you came in, but you're not going to go anywhere with it. So if I were you, I would jump all over that opportunity. And he did. He thanked me very much for my honesty, and he did. And unfortunately, he was killed that day. He was there and he was killed. And I've had to live with that. And if I would have told him, no, don't do it, it's very likely that he'd still be alive today, because he got into the office at 9 o'clock. So that was something that I had for a very, very long time, I had difficulty with. So I know what you're going through, all those people.
But you know, Ari, what you're saying is something there. But Keith, as I remember, worked in the international area. So he did. He started early.
Yeah.
And I think he was one of the guys who came in early. He loved the work he was doing. The fact is that you gave him an opportunity to enjoy something. Now, there's no way, you know, that I could say what I could say. I mean, if he was there 20 years, you might say, look, you gave him an opportunity to have something for 20 years. I mean, he only was there a short time. And it's
right.
God, it's just so hard to say we lost him. But he did enjoy that time he was there. And he was good at it. And he was recognized. No, you certainly can't blame yourself for helping somebody get an advancement, an opportunity in a place that could have been just, you know, great for him.
Right. Correct. Correct. It was a tough time. So I guess, so obviously time heals all wounds. This is a tough one. And I don't know about you, but I still have times where I have difficulty coping with the loss. I just do. It's not often, but as you know, I go around and I speak a lot about my experience on 9/11. And there are times where I'll get up on stage and I'll just freeze. I'll turn around because I'm about to cry as all the memories come rushing back. So even to this day, it's still a difficult thing, you know, but the good thing that I feel that the two of us have been doing is sharing our stories, sharing the hope. Look, your bio basically said it all. You're out there to help people. You want to do whatever you can, whether it's advice on career, business, or anything like that. I know that people always came to you. They always sought your advice. You are an amazing, amazing individual. And the world is lucky to have an individual like you. And we appreciate everything that you're doing and everything that you do.
Well, that's awfully nice of you, Ari. And the thing is, you know, you read a quote a while back. It was something about that they may not remember what you said. They may not remember what you did. But they will always remember how you made them feel. And that was Maya Angelou. Maya Angelou. When I read that 2 dozen years ago, I said, God, she's so right. You're so right. You know, when you think of somebody, you think like I am now. We're talking 9/11. I'm thinking of how these boys, and they were boys. I mean, there was nobody on that floor that was older than me. So they were all boys to me. We all started, many of us started together. But it's how they made me feel. And I wanted to make sure I made them feel my warmth and my guidance, if I could give it to them. The satisfaction I did have was having somebody who was really struggling trying to be a market maker. And it was one thing or another that it was really funny. I had a story with one guy, because he knew so many people out in Wall Street, this guy would say to him, I don't know, let's just say Budweiser's going to go up because of this. And another friend would call him the next day and say, hey, Budweiser's going to go down because of that. And so when he's trading, he doesn't know which way to go, and he would lose money both ways. So I said, no. I'd say, Anthony, everybody loves you, and you really are such a wonderful man. Why don't you become a liaison? Why don't you get these people to call you and give you an order? I mean, if they like Budweiser, maybe they give an order to buy some for them, and the next day the other guy can sell it, and you can get that order too. You know, you can get credit and a pat on the back and paid for some nice work. He became our best liaison on the desk. And wow. He, you know, he's still a friend. He's still a friend now. I'm talking about Anthony Facciarelli. You know, he's Anthony's 84, I think. And we talk probably once a month. And, you know, I'm just so happy he adapted to the position he was going in, because when I asked him to move, he was somewhat insulted, you know, thinking he was not good enough. And it turned out that he was just one of 50 people who I moved around who, in most cases, really liked what they did. A couple didn't, and they would leave. But they found out that what their real skill was in this area. And together we found it out. It was just so amazing, you know, to find that happen, you know.
Well, you know, I do think about you a lot, and I know you're going to find that you're going to say, yeah, but you say that to everybody, but I don't. And the reason I think about you a lot is I have a poster in my office, and it says Peter's Laws.
Oh, yeah. I've got that. Someone gave that to me.
I know you have it. I know you have it, because I remember seeing it in your office in the Trade Center, and I went like, that is the greatest poster. I went out and I bought it. All right, had it framed and hung it in my office.
Didn't you change Peter to Ari on top? Cross it off?
No. But when the towers went down, obviously I lost the poster. And I was upset about that amongst the other paraphernalia that I had. And then one day, a few years later, I was just surfing the web, and all of a sudden, I saw the poster online. So I ordered it. All right, had it framed, and I've had it ever since, and I keep it in my office. And every time I look at it, I kind of smile because I think about you.
Yeah, that's funny. That's really something. I like that. And the boys and girls who gave it to me, I have to remember now, this is a female month, but I did have a lot of female traders, female assistants, you know, uh-huh. on the desk. So we were early in knowing that females should be recognized for their talent and paid the same way. And
they absolutely.
Were, I had a formula, you know, people got this much rebate on the business they did here, and that was their percentage, and it didn't matter whether you were male, female, white, or black, you know,
right.
You got the same formula.
Right.
But I'm looking down at some of my other things. One other thing we talked about when Anthony was deciding if he would do what I asked him to do, if he wanted to leave, I said, you know, there's something that Buddha said, and I said, I wish I knew more about what Buddha said, but I read some of his highlights. One of them is, know the path that leads you forward. Know the path that holds you back. Choose the one to wisdom. And I said, the wisdom for you, Anthony, is what I think is you've got to have an open mind. You got to try to do something different. You got to try to stop doing what you've been doing for 25 years and try this and see if it works for you. And he did. And he's always been. He was so happy. And it benefited him so much in his career. And I was always so proud of that, because he's turned out to be one dear old friend of mine.
Yeah. So before we go, is there anything else you'd like to share with my audience, like words of advice? People are struggling now because of the pandemic. Oh. People have lost businesses. And I know it's a tough thing for me to ask of you, but as you said, at your age, you've seen a lot. You know a lot. You're a very wise man. If you had to pick one thing as words of advice, what would that be?
Well, I tell you, I just read something today, or perhaps it was yesterday, about how a man and woman of family, you know, were going through it and really perhaps about to lose their home, until they looked next door and found that person's house on fire. You say, wow, things always can be worse. You can't go back and change what's happening now, but you certainly can stop what's right now and change the ending. You know, you really have to say, how can I change the ending? And that's by being positive, knowing that there's going to be a second chance, knowing that they're now doing the vaccines, knowing that perhaps we finally got a government that's going to work more for us. There's just so many things that are going on now. No matter how bad you feel, try to pull up bootstraps and face it head on. And you'll be much, much more proud of yourself. obviously, than if you give in to weakness. It's hard to give advice when you're... So I'm sitting here, you know, I was 80 just last week, and I'm saying, okay, three quarters of my life is over now, not even two-thirds, but it's, you know, it's over. But it's okay, because I look around and I look at my children and say, thank God. I mean, what a... Mary Jane, thank you for my three sons. Thank you for our six grandsons. I don't mean that, six grandchildren. And beautiful partners. Yeah, beautiful partners for our children. And we're just so really lucky. One rule I'm violating now, again, is that when you do go and get an opportunity to get advice, remember that while you're talking, this is, again, a Dalai Lama thing, while you're talking, you're repeating what you already know. It's while you're listening that when you can learn and get wisdom. So
that is so, so awesome. They say that, you know why you have two ears and only one mouth? Because you should be listening twice as much as you're talking.
How true that is, Aubrey. You're right. Absolutely right.
Absolutely. Peter, thanks so much for sharing your story with my audience. I'm sure you've touched the hearts of many of the people in my audience. Good luck going forward. If somebody does want to get involved with, you know, some of the charity work that you're doing, what would be the best way for them to do that? Is there a website can go to?
Yes, the one that's really close to my heart and the one, as I say, I found it touched me because we helped people physically. You know, you can see them, touch them, hear them, and their gratitude was so warming. It's called the Pacific House, and it's on Pacific Avenue in Stamford, Connecticut. You can find it on the web. They're looking for donations. The donations would go into buying food, but they also have alcohol classes there for people who are addicted to alcohol and drugs.
Oh, wow.
And then educational classes to get them off the streets, to get them a job opportunity, and to put them back together with a family. It's just a magnificent way they're trying to teach and help these people back into society.
Wow. All right. So it's called the Pacific House in Connecticut.
Correct.
Okay, great.
Stamford, Connecticut.
Stamford, Connecticut. Great. Okay. Thanks again, Peter. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, and I'm your host, Ari Schoenbrunn. Until next time, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never, ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.